tuning in to Art and Business and Murals, a podcast about running a small creative business with interviews, artist stories, and industry tips. I hope this podcast keeps you company on what can sometimes feel like a solo journey. Hey, welcome to the next episode of Art and Business and Murals podcast. And today I have Nancy Donaldson with me. Now, Nancy began Art Lovers Australia, which is it the top online gallery in Australia or up there?
Sarah, I would love you to say that. Someone else has to judge that, not us. So we're definitely up there. I would say we're probably the second largest gallery in Australia.
No.
But hopefully our mission of having the quality artists maybe will give us that. But everyone else has to judge that. It's hard to say that about yourself.
Okay, well, I'll restate that and say, in my opinion, Australia is the top online gallery in Australia, and here is Nancy who started. When did you start Art Lovers?
It was 2016. So we started 2016. I can't really tell you what month it was, but it felt like the whole year. Like, we had the idea over the Christmas break, and then by the time you plan the website, and it started to evolve because it didn't actually have the platform it is now in mind at the beginning. At the beginning, we were actually just going to share our experiences because Jared and I would go on our weekend breaks for, you know, just seeing another exhibition and visiting this artist. And, you know, we just wanted to share those things more publicly. So we started with our Facebook page. And then as we evolved, we thought, actually, we can make this site bigger and support some of our friends that are artists and ourselves. It was a little bit naive to think that we would actually ever create art again once we started the platform. So it's become supporting our friends and way beyond that now. But yeah, it started off really Jewish. We were just going to share like classes that were available, exhibitions that were around, and then it just evolved very quickly into an artist platform for selling.
When you first started it and you were going to be sharing this information, how did you get that evolution happening? Was it more artists signing up than you thought, or you just saw a gap in the market, or how did you move it forward?
Somehow in the planning of the website, once we started like actually looking at the structure of the website, we'll say, oh, well, we should also sell art. And then it just kind of became more selling art because there was a lot more, well, we definitely wanted to sell art because we know from our own experiences from art, being artists, that you have an exhibition, you have heaps of work, you make this great body of work, and very few people sell out. And those pieces at the end of the exhibition come home and put in storage or under the bed, and they don't really get that light of day again for quite a while, unless, of course, you've got so many galleries that you can then pass it on to another gallery, you know, within another state or internationally. So we wanted to make sure those works stayed visible and were available to buy. And just somehow some part of the structure of the website started when we're talking to the designers, just started to take form, and that kind of took its own life into more and more of the actual art selling. And the workshops were kind of already looked after by other people. So when we started like, oh, we can promote your piece, people really had that locked up in other businesses, so we moved away from it so we weren't competing with people who had already put years into developing that, you know, that business model.
Yeah. And I feel like Art Lovers Australia, like I've listed my artwork is listed on Art Lovers Australia and has been since, I think, 2016 or 17. I got on pretty early. But and I've listed my artworks on other online websites over the years. But the one thing that I think Art Lovers does really well is you really create a community. Like, it's not just put your art here, sell it. It's more of, okay, there's a workshop running here, or we're doing a trip out to, you know, this museum, or we're doing like it. And you did the conference. What year was the conference? 2018?
Oh, it was just before, it was the year before COVID, because then the next year had to get cancelled, and then we really haven't had the momentum since then. So the year before COVID, we had it. I think it was the year before, or maybe it was scheduled for COVID and we had to cancel it.
Yeah.
So we've just done smaller things since then, smaller workshops rather than the whole conference that we did in the previous reiteration of it. So, but yeah, it's like, that's the thing. Like, we love people getting together. We, I guess everything is based on our experience. So either our experience directly as artists or our friends' experience. And we know once you become a professional artist, you're often very isolated in your own studio. So those opportunities to say, hey, we're going to go see the Donna Marcus show at Hodder. We just say, hey, does anyone want to come? We're going to be there, you know, so people who can come, have other people who know art to talk to about it and enjoy it. So, and like, not all of us have partners. I'm very lucky. Jared's very into art, so I can do those things with him. But not everyone has a partner that's legitimately interested in art, and it's a bit painful for them to be dragged around to things that they know and have very little interest in. I mean, that would be for me if you took me to football, right? I'd be like, okay, I don't really understand what's going on. I can't appreciate it. You probably should have left me at home and enjoyed it without me.
Yeah, I feel like that's my experience with my son and my husband when we go to MoMA. It's like a sprinting experience where we just run through it, and I just have to pick like one or two pieces that I look at really closely, and then I would catch up with them. So that's great that you run that. And I have to go, I'm sure you are getting sick of me emailing you guys asking when the next conference is. But the conference that you did run, most of the people that I've interviewed on this podcast have been artists that I met at that conference. And the number of, there wasn't a huge amount of us, maybe 200?
I think it was only like 60 people.
Oh, okay.
It was quite intimate. So yeah. it was a big room, but everyone had heaps of space because you had those big round banquet tables.
Yeah. And of all the artists that I met, you know, I probably had conversations with at least half the people there over the conference, and every single one has propelled their career forward, like leaps and bounds. So whether they were one of the speakers or whether they were there attending, everyone has moved forward. And so I'm just really proud. I'm proud to be part of that cohort that attended, and that's why I keep bugging you to do another one.
Well, definitely, it's definitely on our radar. And in the meantime, because of COVID, we did move to doing more digital work. And so, like, we can talk about it later, but, like, we do the digital, what will I say, workshops almost, or, you know, a digital talk from me so I can, like, pitch to our artists some points of what they could do to improve, just in little bite sizes. So when people are featured artists on site, they get to do things live with me, and then I go back and from our conversations live, I just do a quick abbreviated version for all of our artists so they get access to that information. And often it is a distilled version of what the bestsellers have discussed with us in that conversation. So I'm like, oh, make sure I put that in. So if you're one of our artists, you do get access to lots of things that you get in the conference, but kind of in bite sizes. But I agree, like, the conference just moves you forward because you're immersed in it. You get ideas not just from our speakers but from each other, and you build a community, and then you support each other, and you kind of make each other accountable for, like, did you try that? Are you working on video? Like, come on. You can encourage each other, and it works definitely.
Yeah, it does. I want to touch on this digital, the workshops that you're running as well, and how you're supporting your artists, because this is another thing that I think Art Lovers does well, is you genuinely are investing in the artists that you have on the platform, obviously, so that they improve their work and improve their marketing and make more sales. And it's I feel like you're investing a lot in the creatives. Can you talk about how you're doing that?
Yes. So we absolutely believe that the artists need to be invested in, and that's, we're in that pocket. Like, our artists are not at the, well, some of them are, but our core artists are not at the 20 grand plus sale point, which would be maybe in like the elite galleries in Australia. So we're not Michael Zavros, you know, like, we don't represent Michael Zavros. And in between, like, when you leave art college and the 10 years, maybe it's even longer, maybe it never happens for you, the 10 years of developing your career to the point where a gallery picks you up to be represented at that price point, that's a really hard slog, and that's where you lose so much talent. And, like, Australia just hadn't been supporting their artists in that that zone. And the elite galleries can only represent, say, 50 artists. That's all they can do. And I totally understand. And they just support their career for the rest of their life. But what happened to the thousands of artists that are incredible, that could have, any one of them could have been nurtured to, you know, an incredible height of their career, or their work could be, like, some of the people have such amazing stories, yet they just haven't been picked up yet. I use Shel Wallace as an example. I love her photography, and like her, the way she writes about her photography, and she puts all the objects in from her mum's house, and like the layers of meaning. And like, I share that work with my senior students at school, because it's full of all these layers of meaning, and it's sophisticated. And, you know, she's not represented by a major gallery. Like, and we're so proud to have her, because it is so sophisticated. It is layered with meaning, and it's so personal. Like, you know, you almost cry when you read her stories, because they're raw and honest. And anyway, so we like to educate people to keep nurturing them and try to get that group of artists that are actually really talented but just haven't had enough exposure, haven't been supported, and before they decide to walk away from their art career completely and do a different job, you know, we try to keep that going until it can have enough traction to bring them a full-time career.
And so you mentioned, you know, you've got this middle part of artists, and then they go on to galleries. Do you think there's been a shift in the art world where a lot of artists are almost not looking at galleries at all, and potentially looking at upskilling themselves and marketing themselves and selling themselves?
I don't think it is the only pathway. So I think people definitely see that. And I mean, they just don't have to. There's artists that are making a full-time living without that. And if you're very prolific, you don't need to sell it at 20 grand a piece, because you're making a good living at in the 2 grand a piece work, because you're prolific and it's selling, it's affordable, and it's got a market. And sometimes, yeah, you're better off marketing it yourself, you know, and not being with a major gallery, just having, you know, a good turnover. As long as you can get enough audience for what you're creating, you don't necessarily need to be with a big gallery.
Yeah, I think Franco is probably a good example of that. From what I know, he's not in any galleries, but he is represented online by Art Lovers Australia, and he sells. Every time I look in the just sold section, there's always like two or three Francos, and I'm like,
yeah, that is one of the secrets. Like, once you get in the sold section, like, then people see it, and then you're getting more exposure. So, when he's on a roll, he's on a roll, because he's going to have works there that are visible and affordable, and just. Yeah, he does a lot of work, so he always has a lot of work up, and that's one of the secrets. Like, to be a successful artist, you've got to produce a lot of art. Mm-hmm. And some people think, well, I had 4 pieces up and I never made a sale. Like, you just can't expect to make it on 4 pieces. Like, a gallery wouldn't even, I think a physical gallery wouldn't even accept you as an artist unless you had 30 pieces in a body of work ready to go. Mm-hmm. So, we accept people at 4, but they need to know that you need to keep uploading, and it might take 6 months of you uploading, and it might not be until you get 10 pieces that you finally get some sales or some traction, because people need to know that you have got a body of work, you are around, you're consistent. It just takes a while to develop the taste for an artist as well.
And, you know, going back to what you said about getting into the sold section, my brain, the first thing that I went to was, okay, get in the sold section, diversify my prices, have lower cost items that people can purchase very easily, especially in this economic situation, get myself into the sold section. Then people will look at my bigger, larger priced items. Does that work? Do you see it working? You see the back end. I just look at everything.
I see that. It's good to know what your sweet spot is, like what sells. So over a career, you'll see that perhaps it's your meter 20 pieces are your sweet spot, and people love paying X amount for this. It's your easy sell. It's your sweet spot. But then I would suggest that you put at least a few pieces that are above it and below it, so that when someone's doing a search, for example, just saying it was a meter 20 is your sweet spot, then maybe create a series that are also 90 centimeters. So if someone's searching for under a meter might discover you, but then really fall in love with that meter 20 piece. So you just want to have, even though they may not sell, you want to have catches just above and below that it's an easy convert to say, oh, this was what I'm looking for. Like you see so often, I was only really looking for this. Oh, but I fell in love with this and I can fit it in. It's not like so much bigger that it's not on their radar. They just thought they only needed this big, and we can usually convert them to a more substantial piece.
Okay, nice. That's good advice. Yeah. I like that.
So just make sure there's multiple, like don't only have one size. Like you have your core size and that's your core business, but have a little bit above and below for variety.
Okay, great advice.
But you did use Franco as an example, and he does not do small works.
No.
So you should always know where your cutoff is. Like he's not how he likes to work. So you have to be true to yourself. If you're someone who works big, then don't go putting little pieces out to grab attention. It's a waste of your time and it's frustrating. So still be true to who you are as an artist.
Okay, well, I'm doing the opposite of your advice.
So what are you doing, Sarah?
This my sweet spot are the massive pieces, the one behind me, like the 1.5 plus. So those ones sell well, but obviously they take a lot of energy and effort to create and store and all that kind of stuff. But I get sick of doing them because I feel like doing murals. So then I'm like, oh, I just want something I can do sitting on the couch, you know, just play with some ideas, and then I can put glitter on, because I'm not going to put glitter on giant canvas because that's a waste. And so I have like these little 10 by 10 centimeter canvases that I just sit with my cat on my lap watching Netflix and doing rainbows and glitter on them. And I went through a period where I was putting one up a week, and I was selling them very cheap, like $50.
Yeah.
This was more, I think it was more for my own inner child to just get these little ideas out, that just to get the money moving and percolating, and I enjoyed it. But yeah, you're right. It does take a lot of energy.
But I think it's not wrong what you're doing. Kind of, it reminds me of, like, we love Joel Rea's surreal works. And so when we went to see his exhibition, he had a massive piece which would have been over 2 meters, and it was selling for 70 grand. Well, obviously we can't afford 70 grand. But I like that he had included in the exhibition his developmental paintings that were very similar in composition, but they might have been, I don't know, 60 centimeters or something. They're still probably out of most people's price range, but he included his lead-up paintings that were where he was resolving composition before he did the big one. So it's not unlike that, because someone might afford the smaller piece, even a few. They might love that little piece, and then they can still remember you as an artist, and then years to come. And I always use like a significant birthday as an example. They're like, for my 50th, I'm going to get a big one of Sarah's, you know, like people have this in mind. They have a goal that there's going to be a time that they're going to get something extra, so they keep that. And like, we've got some small, just little postcards from exhibitions we went to, and then, you know, years later, you know, for an anniversary, got a piece by that artist, you know, like, so people, it's a long-term nurturing relationship that you never know what seeds you put out years ago that actually come to fruition. Art is not like a short-term game. It's like a long-term. So put the seeds out and just see which ones, keep watering it, you know, keep energy happening with your practice, and then people stay engaged and they won't forget you, and it'll happen. I'm going to give you some like adverse advice personally, okay? Because like, you know, when artists come to me with what you just said about your key stuff, your key work is like the big works, but storage was an issue, and there's cost involved with that. So once again, every time we have a problem, like we go back to our practice and we listen to what other artists do. So you sell mostly online probably, or even if it's not online, you can easily stretch it after it sells. So I would photograph things big. I would keep working big. I'm going off track here, but basically there's not as many artists that work big. So you're going to be in a bit more clear space. So instead of being in the core area where there are like thousands and thousands and thousands of artists are working, you're going to be in a slightly less populated area. You're going to be easier to find. So keep working big. then photograph them stretched, take them off the stretcher, roll them up into just a roll, because you don't have that much texture to worry about it cracking.
No.
So we definitely have artists that take it off and stretch it, and then when it sells, they take it and stretch it and send it. Or even better for some artists, because they're more isolated, they send it in the roll to get stretched and framed in the city where it's sold.
That's what I did the last couple ones that I sold through Art Lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Over Christmas, sent them down rolled, worked on it all rolled. I even photographed it unframed and mocked it up on
Photoshop. Yes.
And
well, you're already doing it, just what I'm suggesting. So that's perfect.
I just need a little Nancy in my head to be like, Sarah, stop doing admin and just paint the large work. Because I'm just not painting. Like, this is, it's just so hard to actually get the momentum going with just get the large artwork, because it feels like doing a large mural, and it's when I'm already doing commercial murals for clients. And then, so I just need to get out of my own head, have a little Nancy in my ear, and just get it going.
At some stage we'll talk about blocking your time, okay, and committing to which days and what. So it's like, it's really about blocking, because you've got to set that time aside.
Yeah.
And you're the opposite of a lot of artists I work with, because most artists, I've got to convince them to do the admin, because they just want to create. And I'm like, you still have to get exposure. You've still got to, like, tell your story and all those things I've got to convince them of. So, like, you really should try to find a balance of about 50%. So it's 50% creating. But if you're a small business, which artists are, you're a small business, you're doing everything for yourself, you have to do 50% admin to be successful. Or you've got to make enough money that you're paying someone else to do the 50% admin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're the opposite. You're very good at doing the business part of it, but we don't want you to get lost in that. We want you to come back and do some
art
for yourself.
And I feel like the less creative work I'm doing, the more burnt out and overwhelmed I get. So for me, I have like little craft projects that I'm working on that kind of get me going. But I like your time blocking idea, and I think that's the only way that I can work in that. We've got Open Studio Sunshine Coast coming up, and so I've got, you know, 10 days in a row where I need to be at the studio from 10 to 4, and if there's no one there, I can just quietly paint in the corner, and that's 10 days in a row where I get to just create and be in my space and probably be interrupted but still be in my space. So I'm looking forward to that.
I personally think with the time blocking, you might not need a whole day, depends on your personality, but you definitely need a half day blocked out for creating. Like, I know when I was creating a lot that it seemed ridiculous, but I'd need at least half a day to get organized. Like, I'd have to go for a swim, I'd have to go for a walk, I'd have to clean the house. Like, I'd have to have all those things so that my body and my mind was ready to, like, create. And I couldn't be interrupted by checking my emails or anything like that, because that totally blocks your flow. Like, you can check in at lunchtime if your emails or something, but you definitely need, or maybe it's a whole day, and something that nurtures you so you're filling up, you know, with experiences and emotion that's nice and settled to create. Or maybe you create from emotion, and so then it's okay to be as angsty as you want, because it's going to be something that gives some life to your artwork. But, yeah, block out more than just 2 hours or something. Have uninterrupted time that's your creating time.
Nancy said so I'm going to do it.
I said so it's pretty serious. If I tell you, you better do it.
No, I totally will. It's exactly the advice that I needed to hear, because, you know, as an artist by yourself, you're kind of in your head all the time, and you're like, I should do this, or I need to do this safety work method statement, or I should put this up online, I need to market this, I need to talk to that person. And you're constantly like churning, and you're like, but I should be painting. And I've got you now and my assistant, because earlier this year I was like, it's really quiet. She's like, just paint. And I was like, oh, I could generate work by doing this. And she's like, just paint. And I was like, well, why don't I start an online group coaching program? And she's like, just paint. And I was like, okay, group coaching program, let's do it.
Yeah. Well, also, maybe that was the right decision. So I'm not going to say it's wrong, but I just say what you've just covered there was a very typical thing of the beginning of a year, because I have so many artists freaked out during the first quarter every year, because you come off the end of a year is usually a quite good time sales wise, that October, November and into December to a degree. And then January is usually the lowest month, maybe January is the lowest, and then March maybe see some pickup. So that first quarter of the year is slow for sales. So I always say, like, if you know the pattern, which is one of the workshops I do, is like a year planning. If you know the pattern, you don't have to freak out. You can plan to make sure you've got some savings put aside from the good sale time to get you through the first quarter, and then the first quarter becomes creating. So you don't have to freak out. You just know, oh, thank goodness, sales are a bit quiet, so I'm just going to focus on creating. So then you're in a rhythm. It's not like, it's, nature teaches you that there's winter, there's summer, there's spring, there's time to do certain things. So once you know the patterns, then you can plan to do what's the most appropriate or the best use of your time. And so sometimes it's creating. And to, like, know that it's part of the pattern, and you're going to have all this great body of work ready for when times are better in the next quarter or the quarter after.
That's great advice, Nancy. I've been working for myself full time for 10 years now, and every January I freak out.
Oh, I understand it, because it's like, if you just go, you're like, what the hell happened? But then you do it and you go, oh, I looked back at last year's figures. But I will say, I just watched the ABC Business Show, and for everyone who's freaked out this year, I totally get it, because the Business Show did say that this January was the lowest in 2 decades.
Wow.
So, you know, even though we're not officially in a recession, it definitely was a very scary time, not just for artists, but for retail in general. People spending, like, that's what the interest rates are doing to kind of calm that. It's definitely worked. People are pulling back their expenditure in all retail. And, you know, we're all seeing that. And February wasn't as bad as 2 decades, but February wasn't a particularly good month for retail. So, you know, and then artists don't have to freak out that it's their work and they should give up their art practice. It's, you are a small business, and this is what's happening for all business right now. And, you know, perhaps you've got a safety net with a partner who earns some income and you can keep going, or maybe you have, like, you have multiple strands within the arts. So you've got your mentoring and you've got your murals and, you know, you've got other areas. And even commissions can get you through these times. So if you book out enough commissions, then you've got the first quarter done in commission work. So there's all these things that can give you a buffer to save it. But, yeah, it's been a particularly slow first quarter.
Yeah.
2024 is not great for retail so far. But as soon as interest rates start going down again, like, people will have more confidence and get back on track, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, it's all a cycle. And from the artists that I've been talking to since maybe mid last year and through till now, it's sluggish, and it's just want everyone out there to know it's not their art, it's not them, it is everyone.
Yeah, and not just artists, it's all retail.
Mm.
Anything that costs money. So it's
like a cycle. On cheese. That's where my money's going, on a block.
Well, cheese is, it's well spent money, cheese.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of happiness in cheese.
Don't know if my trainer would agree, but yeah.
Like, sometimes it's like a little tiny bit of luxury. So I'm all good for cheese.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to keep buying it. Maybe when cheese prices go down, then I can start going back to investing in art. So have you got any, you're filling this with tips and tricks, so I'm going to ask you for more, but for emerging artists, so artists that are looking to, they've got a small body of work and they want to sell it, what are your tips and tricks for them?
Okay, definitely work social media, because you're going to get heaps of feedback and you're going to get lots of practice telling your story. And even if you don't get feedback directly from people's words, you'll get feedback in how much interaction there was.
Mm.
I'll say that with one bit of warning with it, like, your friends and people commenting it may not be your audience. So don't necessarily change your practice just on someone's comment, like, oh, you should really work whatever size, or you should go to the markets, whatever they say. Like, they're not necessarily a a selling artist or have experience or even know what good art is. I've seen some comments of people's, I'm like, that's not the suggestion I would have made. You know, so you got to know who's giving this advice, but you will get to see, like, you could, like you did, Sarah, do the little ones and sell them very cheaply. You could have a project where you do offer, you know, one piece a week for $100 and the first person who comments gets it. But you can't even do that until you build an audience. So get on social media, build an audience, build a following, tell your story, share your work, and just keep that momentum. And all that practice and also making art will position you to then leverage your audience further. So then get on a online galleries platform so they can promote your work further. And whatever, like, there's lots of other projects you can do with collaborations. Like, I know when you get to it's not a beginner's stage, but if further down the track, you know, get in the magazines, like we've had your work featured in Home Design years ago, and that brought you to another level. There's lots of things you can do beyond that. Then we can get you on the TV shows and whatever, but get yourself practiced and get known for being an artist that creates a certain style. Like, you can't do that straight away. You've got to take time to develop what you do. And once that happens, then you're very marketable. So if I'm making an effort to market somebody, I don't want just one piece that looks like that. I want to market this one piece but have a whole body of work behind it that could also sell. So make sure there's a substantial body of work. So what am I saying? Socials, with online galleries, just make lots of art. Yeah.
Going back to the socials, I have a couple of artists that I'm working with and coaching, and they're killing it on socials at the moment. Heaps of, you know, putting their artwork out there. But the one thing that they're really struggling with is putting themselves onto social media to form that connection. Do you have any advice around that?
I think that they don't have to. Is it their face that they're worried about showing?
Yeah, they're showing a lot of their work and they're showing the story behind the work, but they're not really sharing anything about themselves.
I'm not so worried about that, to be honest. Like, I think that's something you drip feed over time. I know if you are a sharer and you're comfortable, go for it, because people do love to connect. But if you're a shyer person, I think we can honor that they are slower to reveal things. But you keep encouraging them, and that's just when they're ready to show another little bit, and maybe through their artwork that is the way they share it. So it's not something disconnected. They would only share things, and I totally honour people that do that, that only share parts of their lives that are to do with their art, and everything else is private, and that's totally fine. But if they're doing something and it's about, I know it could have some symbols of rainbow in there, and they talk about, you know, their experience of being growing up in a household that was religious and not accepting of their sexual orientation, you know, like, I don't know, that would be a big reveal. But you know, something smaller, it could even be, hey, I grew up in the country and we had lots of years of drought, so now I paint lots of green because it just nourishes my soul. Like, whatever it is, they could try to weave into the piece where it came from for them, and that would be enough to slowly reveal who they were. Doesn't have to be a big, big reveal. Like, I probably gave a wrong example about the sexual orientation, but that's a big thing. But little things throughout the art is probably the important thing.
And I can hear a collective sigh from artists going, oh, okay, good. I don't have to put my face on it.
Yeah. I mean, I see there's some people that love to share, like, their favorite this and that, you know, like, it's interesting if you're that kind of sharer, but not everyone is that sharer. Like, honor who you are. If you're more private, then I think only share the stuff you want and you feel comfortable with, and that honors who you are. Like, you can even just really own that you're shy. That could be your share. You say, yeah, like, I'm really a shy person and I like my art to speak for itself. And that's a share.
Yeah.
As long as it's really authentic. I think if you, I think for myself too, it's okay to go and test out your edges and, like, out of your comfort zone to a degree. But if you push someone and they weren't quite ready for it, it can be can have a negative effect that they don't want to do it ever again. It's like, I would be like, oh, don't worry about it. Everyone makes mistakes, but it could be like crushing for them and they'll never do it again. So just to accept each person's personality type with sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great advice. And can I just touch back on something that you just very briefly mentioned, but I think mm-hmm. needs to be highlighted a bit more, is artists in magazines and on TV. So, you know, a dream of mine has always been, and I've always said this to you, to be on The Block, which is a bit hard up here on the Sunshine Coast, and The Block is never in Queensland. But one thing that I've always really admired about you is that you have amazing connections. You seem to know all the people doing all the things, doing the magazines and Grand Designs and The Block, and how do you do it?
I do whatever I can to make their life easier. That's the truth. Like, I come in there and I pitch. Like, with The Block, it took us 2 years to get on The Block because they already had their suppliers, but they weren't really doing original art like we could do. And I was like, this is the way to get the average person to see how amazing art can be. We have to get on there. It's like popular culture. We have to be there. And basically we had our online app, which were like the first ones to have the hoverlay so that people could see it in the home. That we pitched that and they were excited by it, but never went to TV. But anyway, so that was one of the things we had, like, hey, we can make it easy for them to select it. It'll project on this on their wall. And also, just if you're selling work, selling houses for over $1 million, you do not want a cheap print from China on the walls. Okay. So even though their budgets were kind of at that point, they didn't have the budget to do original art, it was like, we'll make it happen. So we can do that. And so we got in on that. And that's what we've done each year. But having said that, like, we're filming with The Block this morning, actually. So before the call, I was like talking to the gallery. And so we try to get as many pieces that we think they might like embedded in the gallery, so that some people from other places have works in there ready to be at least seen, and they often can get picked up. And don't think that Queensland's out of it. Like, Petra, she's in Cairns and she's been on there. So we make it happen. So don't write yourself off because you're in Queensland. Like, we've supplied from Western Australia before. It is a lot of stress, though, because when I give you that call, you had better be wrapping it and booking the courier that day, because it's like real time. You've got to have it there in Melbourne by Friday because deliveries aren't happening Saturday.
Yeah, that's – I always imagined in my head that if I ever got the call from you, I would just get in my car and drive it myself. Like, I'd just get there.
And we have had people drive from South Australia. They're like, you know what, we can do it ourselves. They hired a van and they drove across.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it happens. So don't write yourself off because you're in Queensland. And also, we have other TV shows. It's about to go to air next month. So Dream Homes, they did state by state. So, you know, that'll be something we'll continue with. So they're like a rival for – it's a new show, but it's a rival for The Block. And selling houses, they go state to state. So those are opportunities. We have those extra layers. But, of course, everyone wants The Block. It's like the big name.
Yeah. Isn't that how everyone got to know David Bromley, and now he's on every
– I think so. Like, of course, he's a smart businessman, right?
Oh, he is one of the best. He's just all over it.
Definitely businesslike. I agree there.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things you can learn from him.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's lots of things to learn from you. Did you want to tell us more about these workshops? You've got one coming up, don't you?
I have already recorded it. So our artists have already got it in the first quarter, because I know that the planning, it's a bit quieter, so it's a good time to plan at the beginning of the year. So one of the courses I have videoed is, I should get the name right. Where did I write the name down? Setting Up for Success is the title of it, and it's year planning for artists. So we basically plan out every quarter what the quarter should look like, how much you can manage without sabotaging yourself. So, yeah, there's a plan, because the problem is if you don't plan, things get away on you and the whole year can slip away and you're like, was there any real growth this year because you didn't plan it? Or sometimes even worse, there was a lot of growth, but because you hadn't planned it, you didn't even acknowledge yourself for how much you had achieved. And also you just, if opportunities come up, you don't want to be scrambling. Like if you're going to always have an end of financial year sale, or for you, you're always going to do the open studio, like it needs to be put in your calendar and you need to plan around it. You're going to have that week available to be in the studio. You're going to have preparation time. Like there's a whole heap of planning around it to make it the most successful as possible. Mm-hmm. So all those things you can have in your calendar and lock it in. And yeah, if you don't do that, you do a scramble and you kind of regret, like, oh, if only I'd like remembered earlier, I could have done a post or sent out an email or an invitation to do this more successfully. So yeah, there's problems with people that don't plan, well, everyone. So that workshop's very much about planning and ideas of what you can lock in for your year. And the other one is something we do, which is a series of workshops with, it's called the Accelerator Program. So it's basically giving you the key information and skills that you need to accelerate your selling online. That goes through like telling your story visually and in words, and how to get your images searchable on Google. There's all these little tips within it, but basically it also positions you more as a business. So how to think more as a business, like the quality materials you need, what sizes, how to price consistently, all those things. I'm probably overwhelming you, but yeah, there's a lot of things in it that some people have not thought about because they more instinctively fell into their art sales and they just kind of like, oh, what will I sell this for? I'll sell it for this. And there wasn't really necessarily a plan on how that looked for their business. Are they making any money? How can they make a better choice? Like we talked about, maybe not stretching and framing, just having it on a roll, and then that saves you that upfront cost.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of our artists, I'll just use that as an example. Some of our artists have like 100 works available. If they've paid for every piece to be stretched and framed, that's tens of thousands of dollars worth of resources locked up. And I think it's much better not to put that money up front, give that as a buffer for your business, keep it in your cash flow. And then once the sales happen, especially online, sale happens, just send it and get stretched and framed and sent then. In the meantime, it's less storage, less upfront cost.
Yeah.
I'm all for lowering the upfront costs.
Yes, I think that's a great point. And just while we're talking about getting it stretched and framed, and I know that Mobile Framing is a great business that you guys recommend, and I use them in Sydney and Melbourne, and they're fantastic to work with.
Yeah, and they have a branch from Byron to Sunshine Coast. So it's not as often that run, but yeah, Itai does the Queensland aspect. So they've got those three key positions along the East Coast, and they are amazing. And because they will deliver it to the door often, it's just such good service. Yeah. And you don't have to stress that you've paid for framing and it might get damaged on the way. It's like taken care of, and they're great guys, friendly. Yeah, it really adds to the service.
And you don't have to pack the artwork, which I think is one of the worst parts of the job, packing artworks.
I would agree with you, Sarah. It's like, sometimes we keep a few artist works in our house when they're away on holidays or something, just for like our best artists. But when they sell the works, I always love it when they've organized themselves and it fits exactly with the box they've supplied me with. So when you get to the level where the box is already pre-made because they create in a certain size and you slip it in, you're like, oh, this is heaven. But when you've got to like create a box, which I've had to do so many times, and reconstruct a box, that is like painful.
No, I 100% agree with you. And I often watch videos on like TikTok and Instagram of artists packing their work into these pre-made boxes that are beautiful. And then I just picture me with the artwork on the ground, like sweating profusely, trying to wrap this stuff around and tape it all, and just swearing and carrying on like a chook. Yeah, I do wait till I get to that level of, you know, professionalism.
Once you get your sizes done though, but also like, as I said, sending in a tube is such a good solution because, you know, for example, Mobile Framing can receive it, stretch it, frame it and deliver it in person. And you didn't have to box it. You didn't have to pay the extra weight of it being stretched or framed before it got sent out, all those things. It's generally quite a good saver.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. And because it's been the last few large artworks that I've sent have been that way. The other thing is you can't, well, I have not been able to find like Australia Post rolls where you can put them into. So I've been going to Bunnings and getting mm-hmm. the guys in the plumbing section to cut me PVC pipe. And I'll say to them, okay, I've got an artwork that's 1.8. So I need that one cut to 2 meters. And then this one here, and they just cut everything there for me. And I just carry all my PVC pipe out, shove it in. Easy peasy.
It's such a good idea. And PVC is so durable.
Mm.
And yeah. watertight too, so it's excellent.
Oh, maybe I should organise for like mobile framing to just collect all my PVC piping, and when I go to Sydney and Melbourne next, I'll just collect it all back and then take it off. I wonder what would they do with it. That's a good question to ask them.
I don't know.
They could probably pipe a new house, do all the pipes, all the PVC pipes they receive.
If you were closer by, I'm sure you could just go and pick it up. But
that would be fantastic.
Somebody's probably getting a lot of pipes from somewhere.
Yes. Yes. Or they do just hoard them all, and maybe I could collect some. Anyways, that's a phone call to make later today.
Definitely do a call because, yeah, I don't think they need them. So they would be probably happy for an artist to come and take it off their hands.
Yes, trip to Sydney soon, maybe in the car, who knows.
But yeah, because Sydney does most of the send outs for yeah. if it's being mailed out.
These yeah. online workshops that you said you did, are they available to the public or are they available to only artists on
there? They haven't been available to the public, but we're just going to open that up later this month. So I can give you a link to share with your audience because we are just going because we have been very much looking after our own artists, but we're about to open it up so other people can access some of that information.
Great. Oh, that's good to know. I'll put that link in the show notes.
Thank you.
No worries. So we've done tips on, oh, do you have any extra tips on artists that are listing their artworks? Anything that they can add to it or?
Listing your artworks. Well, one of the tips would be your image. So when you're putting an artwork up online, make sure that you are not just keeping it as a number like 1,842 JPEG. Like that's not going to help you at all. And this is like something that's so little and it's not something you're going to see a change of overnight, but long term in your career, you definitely want to be organized with naming your artwork images. So definitely have your name, the artwork title, and I would encourage to put two descriptors. So if it was ocean art or ocean abstract, something like that, or if yours, just make sure it's very specific. So if somebody went to actually Google. So I would say put your gallery in. So if you're uploading on Art Lovers, put Art Lovers Australia. Because if somebody looked up Art Lovers Australia and in your file name it says Art Lovers Australia, then your image will come up in an image search. So if they're looking for us as a gallery, your work will actually be visible.
Ooh.
So it will actually click you through. Like if they click on it, it should come to that image that you've got on site with us. So you're going to be in that more easily found because someone's gone, Art Lovers Australia, ocean art. They're wanting ocean art from us. And there you are because you put that in your, or you might say large abstract. So put like two descriptors. It could be native flowers, still life. You know, it could be four words even for some people, but don't like put 20. It's ridiculous. But have a few, like if it's not relevant, it's just frustrating. So have just a few descriptors, two I suggest, in your file name when you save your image, and then you're going to be coming up. So even if it's still life, somebody might go still life, or they might be looking up Sarah you, and you've seen that yourself, like looking up Sarah and what image has come up, then hopefully you've got your name in your image title.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. So if you haven't, go back. So that's the thing. Like I think artists, and also if they've seen it on something and they're like, the title was this, or they've got the old exhibition listing or something and they had the title and they made a note of it on the postcard, like, oh, I love this piece by Amica or whoever it was, then if they type that in, it should be able to be found through the image as well. So it gives you another way to be found. So if you're not titling your images when you're saving them, especially uploading them to site, you are missing out on some of the searchability. And, yeah, we just don't want to miss out. Like, make sure. And also, like, for yourself, when I say, hey, Sarah, I have a chance to get you in Grand Designs for this artwork, you don't want to have to go through files and files and files. You just want to go into your own file, do a search on that title, and have it come up. So make sure. All artists should just start getting organized. Don't just dump all your photos. Make sure you're clearly titling them. And that's the thing I would say. You need to include title, the artist's name, two descriptors, and your gallery. And that gives you the five things that will help your searchability. Yeah, that's my suggestion with uploads.
That's great advice. And going back to an interview I did with Kate Owen, she's also represented by Art Lovers Australia online, and she's been published in Grand Designs or Home Beautiful magazine thanks to Art Lovers Australia. And she gave similar advice, not so much the file name, but she said to always have, you know, a folder of images that are ready to go, so that if you get the call from you or get contacted by someone that writes for one of these magazines, you've got that folder of images ready to send to them immediately that are all beautifully file named, everything set up, ready to go to print, because they're often on a really tight deadline too.
They are. And especially when COVID happened, it was really a great thing to do, because no one was going out to studios taking photos. So if you already had your photos, that's for newspapers and everything, if you already had photos, you were so much more likely to get editorial.
Mm.
And even now, I think people just don't pay photographers that much in their organizations. And so if you've got your own photography that can be used, it's so much more likely.
Yeah.
And that's also something we do, like mentor through. If you are going to pay for a photo shoot, which people, you know, if you're at that next level of your career, you kind of need to have professional photos. But you can take some amazing ones on your iPhone. So you can do a lot that's really quality, and you may not need that. Just like if you're going to pay for a photo shoot, or even if you get your friend to do it, like make sure you have like at least three outfits, because when we've done photo shoots, you kind of had all these different positions, but you're still in the same outfit and you're like, ah. So we try to like just change the shirt or do something, put a scarf on, just so there's more variety of shots, so you can get more longevity out of those photos. And obviously in the mentoring, we talk about like making sure you're telling your story, but like the worst thing you can do is just have a glass of wine in front of a painting, because it's not telling anything as part of the story. You need to like be in maybe your painted jeans, having a cup of tea in your studio. That's more telling your story than that exhibition time, because you're just so removed when you're finally exhibiting the work. It's more like the behind the scenes, the juiciness of your creation time that people want, that story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great advice. I like that. Goodness, Nizzy, I feel like I've had almost like a one-on-one consultation with you today with all this advice that you've given. But really, this is for the public.
It is, but you're actually doing so many things already.
Yeah, there's a bit going. But, you know, it's amazing. I've been doing this for 20 years and I'm still learning so much myself. Like last week I was at the paint shop for ages and they were showing me how to do this thing with really straight lines. And I was like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. And then out with another mate painting a wall and he was showing me those things and learning all this stuff today. Like I think that my SEO is pretty good, but now I didn't even think to add all those words to my, like, you just learn all the time. Mm. I think as a creative, you're a lifelong learner. It's just the way that it is.
Yeah. And I say for someone like you, Sarah, because you've already done, like you said, you've done 20 years in the industry. And when you get to that level in anything, in sport, recreation, you know, in business, when you pay for something to go to a mentor or something, if you get one piece of advice that you didn't know, then that's paid for it. Because most of the things you will know now, but if you get one new thing, it's paid for itself because you have grown. So Yeah. But you're, you know, as you're saying, you're already getting new stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I feel like this episode's very juicy. Very
okay. I'm glad you got stuff.
Oh, I'm going to promote this one like crazy.
You go for it. Like the thing is, we want people to be successful, and like there's some little things that can happen. But like, my overall discussion about it, like all the things I suggest, they're all things that you're planting seeds with. Like I'm very much into nature and garden in my philosophy. So you just have to know that you're planting seeds and you can't expect that they're going to pay off straight away. Like you put the seeds out there, like you share a social post, somebody might buy that day, but likelihood is they're going to need to see it several times, get to know you more, trust who you are, and then there might be a purchase 6 weeks later. So it's like seeds. You have to keep social mediaing, you know, keep sharing bits of your story, and then that garden will grow. So don't give up because you like spread some seeds and then neglected the hell out of it and nothing happened. And also, like, don't just throw four seeds down and expect a garden from that. You know, like, you know, you spread a whole heap and, like, maybe 10% becomes something. So do a whole heap and you'll have a lush garden over time.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I can see that in my own practice. Projects have come back to me years and years and years later with a postcard that I handed out at a festival that I was at, and then I get a commission for 8 artworks. And I was like, oh, glad I did the postcards. That was well the $100 I invested. Yeah. So
That's exactly it. It's seeds and you don't know which ones are going to take hold, but you've got to keep planting them and you've got to keep watering them and keep giving that attention to your practice. And then over time, it'll all pay off.
That's it. Well, I think we've gone through all the questions I had, the workshops. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about, Nancy?
Just having a look. I think initially when we discussed doing this, we talked about just some tips for what consistencies I see or think patterns I see with artists that are like our bestsellers. So I did make a couple of points there. Let me just... Of course, I have so many notes here, don't I?
I love it that you've taken notes. I think it's
well. I'm just going to talk with the artists that are consistent. They have a lot of work, so they make art. Like they just put so much out. And I will say, sometimes I hear people comparing themselves. I'm like, oh, how come they make so many more sales, and I think my work's better, perhaps. And I'm like, well, they have like 100 works up, and they're going to be found. Out of the 40,000 artworks on site, they're going to have their piece come up more often. And so if you only put 4 works up, it's really not going to be enough to get traction. You have to like keep building your body of work and keep uploading things regularly. Those people that sell regularly are also putting up something every week. Maybe they're quite prolific, and a photorealist can't do that. But putting up something, then you're always going to be in the new work, and our collectors that follow us a lot, they're always just going to new work. They don't want to see all the stuff they've seen before. They want to see what's new work. So always have something in new work. Make art, new work, quality materials. You have to make sure after you get through your experimental phase of developing your own style, you have to invest in making sure it's quality. And for some people that might just be getting their canvases stretched by professional. Some people it might be actually moving to linen because it's to the level of strength that they need for their photorealism. You know, if they're going to sell their work for 10 grand, they need to have even more expensive materials to validate that shift. Also like framing, like find out who's a good framer, like get good people around you, quality. And I'll say even as much as I hate boxing, it is worthwhile investing in a decent box or a system, or maybe even moving art. Moving art does come for ghost. Like Aiden only requires one bubble wrap layer, and he hand delivers it. So that's so nice to have a quality delivery. So just find what you can afford within your price range, and then do it really, really well. I think, quality materials is also in there. So I understand, like I've done a whole heap of artworks that were on craft card that I just put gesso on and then just go on and painted, which is acceptable, but I wouldn't do that now. I would say invest in quality materials and move forward from there. The other thing that they do, oh, here it is. They really take a business-like approach to their practice. So if they're making it is their livelihood and they watch the market. So I've seen artists move 10% down when things got quiet. And I know that's not a typical thing for an artist to do, but if that's your livelihood, they had the flexibility to drop their prices. Maybe it was at $2,100 and they dropped it to like $1,900 just so it had that shift to keep supply happening, keep their livelihood alive. And they definitely build relationships. So they make sure they're involved with things with their gallery or they're building relationships with their followers online. Relationships are like where it's at. If you build the relationships, those things happen long term to pay off. And like we have 1,000 artists and like, you know, if I just think there's lots of touch points within our business of different people. So sometimes like you would have worked with Kim with uploading things. Like she's so helpful, you know, like just a bit of gratitude for, I'm pretty sure people are pretty grateful to Kim. But, you know, like when she hears gratitude, that makes her feel more fulfilled and she'll work harder for you. And the girls at the gallery. So when I was working with galleries, I would always say, I knew what coffee Lisa loved and I would always drop in with a coffee for her, you know, like she didn't get to go for a coffee because she was there all day. So just building the relationship, touching base, can I do anything for you? That goes a long way in longevity of your career. Anyway, yeah, that's probably a little bit like soft stuff, but I think all those things do add up.
Yeah, I can't agree more with you. I remember when Libby was working at Art Lovers Australia, mm-hmm. I would just email her out of the blue and say, what are you working on? What's happening? Are there any commissions in? What's going on? And I've never been contacted so many times for commissions through Art Lovers as I did when Libby was looking after it. And I think it's just because we became good mates and, you know.
Yeah, like there's always artists that are front of mind. Mm-hmm. So as our commissions officer has changed it, and we've changed recently. So like Danny now is getting to know the artists again and who says yes to things and like what can they do. So there's a bit of handing over from Libby to Zan to Danny. Yeah, it's kind of a good learning pocket in our business because you get to know so many artists and what they're able to do. But that's exactly it. Once you get somebody who says yes to something and you know they can do it well, they're your go-to. Like, I can get this person to do it. I can get this person to do it. Yep. So, yep, get in and make it work.
Great advice. Oh, Nancy, thank you so much. This episode has been so good.
I'm glad you got stuff from it. Like it's like everyday stuff for us, but I forget to share it sometimes.
Yeah, you don't know what other people don't know. You just assume everyone knows the same as you. Yeah.
Yes.
No, this has been absolutely fantastic. And I know a lot of artists, particularly myself, that are going to get a lot from this episode. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
You're totally welcome. Thanks, Sarah, for having me on and letting me share some stuff.
No problems.
Thank you for tuning in to the Art and Business and Murals podcast. Please feel free to reach out via email at podcasts@sarahscully.com or follow up the show notes on the website at sarahscully.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends and fellow creatives. I'd like to take this opportunity to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land in which I record this podcast, the Gubbi Gubbi people, and I'd like to pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging.